So normally on Wednesday mornings there is lively conversation at our sermon circle, and ideas zing around the place, and we talk about all the different readings that we have in the given week. There's an echo of it on Sundays as well, when we follow up the service afterwards with Sunday reflections. So there you are. I didn't mention it in the announcement, so now is a good time to mention it. After we've had our chance to have coffee and cupcakes, then please do come and join us in the Denson Lounge for just a few zingers, hopefully, as we chat. Except this last Wednesday, when I got told what I wasn't allowed to preach on, and I felt kind of hamstrung by it. It was made very clear by one of the members, who shall be anonymous, that they did not want one of those let's all be thankful and isn't everything wonderful kind of sermons for this year's Thanksgiving. So my usual gratitude is a good thing, of which I've done 11 variations looking back at my notes, isn't going to cut it, at least for our anonymous bill. Oops. But then, with the readings that we have for today, there's not a whole load of let's all be thankful and isn't everything wonderful energy leaping off the page. We've got the destroyer, the hopper, the cutter in our reading from Joel, the locust who has stripped the land bare. First Timothy, definitely not by Paul, but by someone who's very doer indeed, his usual downcast theological viewpoint. And our gospel reading tells us not to worry, but to strive after God's kingdom, God's reign, and righteousness, about which more will be said in a moment. But not, as I say, big thanksgiving energy. Or maybe it's that we might not be feeling that big thanksgiving energy at this time, or that I don't have big thanksgiving vibes going on. Perhaps, like me, you feel somewhat exhausted by the ongoing news reports of extreme weather and the climate emergency we are in the middle of. Perhaps the wars and rumors of wars are getting to us. Maybe we're sick of electioneering, both the eternal election cycle of our neighbors to the south of us and our own upcoming provincial elections. Maybe all the talk of stewardship, our annual campaign, is creating a sense of heaviness because we're concerned about exactly what the future will look like, not just for our own community of St. John the Divine, but for the church as a whole. So maybe the only thanks we feel we're giving at this time is, well, thank God we're still here. And that's okay. If that's all we can muster, that's fine. Because our role as a Christian community is not to pretend that everything is okay. Faith is not about making us feel happy, some kind of I'm okay, you're okay self-help program. Faith is about living into the hard parts of life as well, of acknowledging our own pain, the pain of the world, and the pain of the earth. And it's about not stopping there. It's about sharing these burdens, these struggles in community, learning with and from one another how we walk faithfully. This Christian community is a place where we can catch glimpses of those moments of beauty in music, in prayer, in liturgy, in the art all around us, in this heritage of brick and wood left by our forebears, and the simple, symbolic sharing of bread and wine, reminding us of the divine nourishment that we are gifted with. We gather as sharers of the divine within, between, and around us. We gather to seek to make meaning, to wrestle with what is happening in our world, and to hear those spiritual stories and thoughts of our forebears which we can learn from, disagree with, and ponder together. Take, for instance, our reading from the book of Joel. Even within that one short passage, there's a wealth of thought we could take away from that opening sentence. Do not fear, O soil. Be glad and rejoice, for the Lord has done great things. Do not fear, you animals of the field, for the pastures of the wilderness are green and the tree bears its fruit. And so it continues. And we might not notice, as it's not been the way of our Western thinking on the whole, how that appeal to the soil, the animals, the wilderness, the trees and the vines, and lastly, if we were to continue the reading, the children of Zion, how it's all intertwined. The well-being of the earth, the plants, the animals, the human beings is all related. That may seem blatantly obvious, but it's not the way we've been acting for the past few centuries. Where the earth and the waters have been strip mined, clear cut, overfished, drilled, covered in toxic chemicals and set ablaze in order to increase production and to make money. We see the earth, the seas, the skies as resources rather than gifts, to be used rather than stewarded. It's this understanding which has sunk deep into the human psyche, which moves us away from taking responsibility for the earth and sees creation as little more than something that exists purely for human benefit, subject to the whims of the market and the eternal quest for so-called economic growth. In the writings of our Hebrew forebears, the link between the earth and the divine and humanity seemed obvious, so obvious that God was credited for both good and bad. The plague of locusts and the bountiful harvest. We may not be convinced of such an interventionist God, but we can still learn from our spiritual forebears the importance of recognizing this web of life where all is connected, and where we know ourselves to be a part of creation, not apart from creation. This understanding, the intimate connection between ourselves and the world around, the earth under our feet, the plants and the animals, is found again and again in the teachings, the parables, the illustrations that Jesus uses, including today's well-known passage about not being anxious, taking note of the lilies of the field and the birds of the air, and remembering the futility of worrying. Here, I think it's important that I do say, I don't think Jesus is saying we shouldn't care about food or clothing or about making provision for our needs, but that worrying is only investing energy in what hasn't happened and what may never happen. When we worry, we shut down our critical faculties. We go into survival mode. Anxiety turns us to fight, flight, or freeze. We do not reason well. We lose our creativity. We go into individualism mode, and we stop working cooperatively. Jesus is not advocating a don't worry, be happy approach to life. It's more like worrying is a surefire way to take away our happiness kind of approach. In typically vivid and poetic imagery, Jesus returns us to our focus, the kingdom, the reign of the divine, a place of righteousness, of equity, of generosity, of healing, of grace, and of peace. A place of justice for the earth and all its peoples. And when the earth becomes a place of mutual flourishing, then all the other things, people having enough to eat, a place to live, enough to wear, all those things come too. Thanksgiving is a reminder that this all begins with recognizing what we have and committing to use all of this for the well-being of one another, of our community, and of all the people and the earth. In recognizing the gift that is this world, the gift that is this community, that is our faith story, our human story, we can appreciate and value it. And we can value one another and all creation. Thanksgiving, gratitude, is just the beginning. Even if we're just struggling with that, well, thank God we're still here. We together are called to go further, to work for justice, to go together. We cannot do it all, but we can do what we can do through advocacy, through how we use our money, through our social justice and social action work, through our prayers, our engagement with the arts, with music, with learning. All of these are ways in which our thanksgiving moves into action. And we do none of this alone, for we do all of it in community. A community which, to me, is a source of much to give thanks for, which seeks to live out the values of our faith in real, world-changing ways. Long may it continue. Thanks be to God. Amen.